Wall Street reform is a done deal.
Goldman Sachs makes a deal. BP finally deals with the oil leak.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, hello, I'm Bill Radke.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. Happy Friday. It's July 16th. President Obama is dusting off his pen collection. New rules for the financial sector have passed.
BP stops the gusher in the Gulf. Goldman Sachs settles its fraud case out of court. And if that isn't enough, we'll give you all the week's money news in just 1 minute. We'll even make it rhyme, because we know you're short on time. But first,
President Obama has some signing to do. Financial regulatory reform passed the Senate yesterday. But how's it all going to work? Marketplace's Jennifer Collins has more on the bill and what it does.
It creates an office to protect you when you use your credit card. It sets up a council of new regulators to watch the economy for things like the housing bubble. Regulatory consultant Eugene Ludwig says these are big steps.
Though it's not the kind of fun thing that gets you going in the morning.
Unless, of course, you're someone like Eugene Ludwig. And he says we still don't know how these regulations will actually work.
The application of these rules is immensely important in terms of the balance it strikes between innovation and growth on the one hand and stability and safety on the other.
Ludwig says the bill leaves that balance to the regulators, many of whom haven't been hired yet. Lawrence White teaches economics at NYU.
A couple of years down the road, the Congress can revisit the issues. Worst case, then the Congress gets into the business of legislating the details.
And at that point, we'll have hired a few new regulators. Maybe that will at least help the job market. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
For more on this, we turn to Chief Economist Chris Lowe of FTN Financial. He joins us every Friday from New York. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
So three big business stories at the end of this week: financial regulation, Goldman Sachs settled fraud accusations, BP at least temporarily capped its oil well. Overall, what do we take away from these big stories?
Well, look, if I'm going to try to find one big picture way to wrap those all together, it would have to be this. Back in May and June, hiring essentially stopped in the private economy, we think because of uncertainty surrounding all of those things. So now maybe since we've settled that, companies can go back and start making decisions about next year and start hiring again.
Interesting. Chris, hang on a sec. I want to tell our listeners more about that Goldman Sachs settlement. Goldman was charged with not being totally open about financial instruments it sold just before the financial crisis. Marketplace's Elisa Roth is with us live from our New York bureau. Hi, Elisa.
Good morning.
So Goldman agreed to pay $500 million fine. Who gets that money? Is it the investors who lost money?
Partly, yes. About half the money will go to two European banks who lost big buying those investments. Actually, one of them, Royal Bank of Scotland, says it's still contemplating further action against Goldman Sachs. Meanwhile, the rest goes to the U.S. government, so I guess ultimately to us, the taxpayers. The only thing is, when you do the math, it ends up being about 97 cents a person, so not much of a windfall there. It's probably worth mentioning here, the SEC isn't upset that investors lost money. That just goes with the territory. Rather, the agency argued the losses were unfair because Goldman didn't properly disclose those various conflicts of interest. So the game was essentially fixed.
Well, $500 million fine, it's not nothing, but Goldman does not have to admit any wrongdoing in the case. We're talking here about banks that make billions a year. Elisa, break that down for us. Is this a token fine?
I talked to Alistair Milne this morning. He's a banking professor at the Cass Business School in London. He says Goldman got off easy because there really wasn't much else the SEC could do.
It's difficult to prosecute such cases in the courts. So in the end, I think they've been able to face down the SEC and in exchange for this fine.
Certainly, the fine itself is a lot smaller than a lot of people had been predicting. You know, as soon as we started hearing about a possible settlement, people were saying it could be more than $1 billion. The other thing is, if you put this into the context of those Wall Street earnings we've been hearing about this week, it's really just a drop in the bucket. Goldman Sachs doesn't report second quarter earnings until Tuesday. But the last time it reported, it was earning that much money every 2 weeks.
Every 2 weeks. Marketplace's Elisa Roth, thank you for that.
You're welcome.
And that leads us back to economist Chris Lowe. Chris, you heard Elisa say Goldman can make $500 million in 2 weeks. We just got earnings reports this morning from a couple other big banks, Citigroup, Bank of America. As I said, their revenues were down, but their profits were still up to almost $3 billion. What are the big banks' balance sheets saying about the economy?
Well, the emerging theme for the second quarter earnings is very much about reducing set-asides for loan losses. People are paying their mortgages at a better rate than they were. They're also paying their credit cards at a better rate than before. So banks don't have to set aside quite as much as they did. But I would say this, if the second quarter slowdown in economic activity continues, they may not be able to continue to write off those loss provisions for much longer. So we look at those numbers as a one-time windfall and expect to see that earnings will slow in the future.
That's Chris Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial. Chris, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Friday, July 16th. I'm Bill Radke. For the latest look at the markets, go to the numbers at marketplace.org. Apple will break its silence today about the malfunctioning antenna on its new iPhone 4. The company's called a news conference at its Cupertino, California headquarters. Marketplace's Steve Henn has the story.
When your hottest product has become a target of Dave Letterman's top 10 list, your PR strategy is out of control.
There's something hinky about the new iPhones. They're not hooked up right. There's a problem with the signal sensor. There's a problem with the antenna. They don't like to be held.
Steve Jobs probably isn't feeling too cuddly either. But Mary Spaeth, who specializes in crisis management, says it's time for Apple to show its fan base some love.
Yeah, the first thing they need to do is not be arrogant. That is, they need to be sympathetic, show that they care, display their vaunted technical expertise.
Spaeth says Apple needs to offer a fix. If Jobs uses this press conference to deny a problem exists, Apple could get creamed, but a little humility would go a very long way. I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
With us to talk more about it is Laura DiDio. She's an analyst at Information Technology Intelligence Corporation. This is a research firm, and she's with us live from suburban Boston, Mass. Hi.
Good morning, Steve.
Thanks for being with us. What are we going to hear from Apple this morning?
Well, what I hope we're going to hear is Steve Jobs getting up there and being transparent and telling the world how pervasive and how severe this problem is with the iPhone.
But let's get back to reality. Is it going to be Steve Jobs today, and is he going to say that?
I hope it will be Steve Jobs, and I hope he will. I hope he will say that. At the very least, they have to be specific about how they are going to quickly and decisively address this issue. We need to know, is this a widespread problem? Is it isolated? And how severe is it? And if it is a significant issue, Apple needs to step up to the plate and say, we will do whatever it takes, up to and including a recall, no matter how much it costs, to fix this problem.
You think they knew about the problem, as the Wall Street Journal reported this morning?
Well, there's a lot of controversy about that, and they might have had an inkling that there could have been something amiss, but until you actually get a product out into a production environment, you really don't know the extent of an issue. If it's in a test or pilot network, you might have a suspicion that there's an issue.
I'm going to ask you quickly, what's the relief here? Very, very quickly.
What's the relief?
Yeah.
The relief is if they need a recall, they need to do a recall.
Laura DiDio from Boston, Mass. At ITIC, we thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Friday, July 16th. I'm Steve Giotakis. For the latest look at the markets, check out the numbers at marketplace.org. We're going to get a take on the global perspective now. What's happening in business and economics around the world and how it affects us here in the United States. At the White House, President Barack Obama hailed BP's temporary capping of the Gulf of Mexico oil gusher.
The new cap is good news. Either we will be able to use it to stop the flow, or we will be able to use it to capture almost all of the oil until the relief well is done.
And investors have been cheered by the fact that the British oil giant's cap is working. But how is that going to bode for business going forward? Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us from London with the latest. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
So how much hope does the company place in this cap?
Well, given the number of previous attempts that have failed, the company is sounding pretty cautious. BP says this is only a temporary measure. Engineers are carefully monitoring the new cap. The company acknowledges the problem won't be probably solved until the relief wells are sunk by the end of July, middle of August. Only then can the oil be diverted and the damaged pipe closed and concreted in.
And what about the company itself, Stephen? Is it safe to say BP is going to survive this disaster?
The markets have come to that conclusion, but of course there's still a lot of uncertainties about the cost of all this. One thing seems certain, though. If BP does survive, its corporate culture will never be the same again. Before the disaster, analysts say, BP rewarded and promoted aggressive go-getters within the company, risk-takers. Chris Grabowski of Peak Oil Consulting says that will have to change.
People who are good at safe operation, who are good at making sure that everyone follows the rules exactly and does all the right things, will become favored within the company hierarchy. In other words, promotion will come from that source.
He doesn't think BP will get out of deep water drilling, by the way, but he says it'll have to work hard to convince governments around the world that safety is now its first priority.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard reporting from London. Stephen, thanks.
Okay, Steve.
And if BP's cap holds, experts will start to figure out how much oil spilled into the water. Reporter Adrian Hill says the number they settle on has big implications for BP.
The bigger the spill, the bigger the fines for BP.
It could be quite large.
Kathy Milliston is an analyst with Morningstar. BP could be fined $1,100 to $4,300 per barrel of oil spilled. That can add up fast, depending on the final size of the spill.
Anywhere from $4 billion to $45 billion.
You'd think BP might have every reason to lowball the numbers, but University of Michigan professor David Ullman says it's better for the company to play nice.
We should be clear that the maximum penalty is not the same as what the actual penalty will be.
Ullman says when the government sets the fine, it'll consider just how cooperative BP has been. For Marketplace, I'm Adrian Hill.
We told you about the passage of financial reform. Well, employees of the big banks are going to probably be asking for an extra cocktail at the end of today. But there's a group of investors raising a glass for a different reason. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reports.
It's a warm summer afternoon, and on the roof deck of a midtown Manhattan high-rise, dozens of heavy-duty investors are gathered for happy hour. But this is not your typical Wall Street get-together. It's a beer tasting at Auerbach Grayson, a firm that invests in emerging countries. Fittingly, the beer selection is heavy on brews from the frontier.
I just had my first beer from Indonesia and my second beer from Kenya, so I plan on finishing the menu.
That's hedge fund trader John Preisler, one of the firm's clients.
The typical Wall Street dinner or broker dinner is a steak, and it's usually in a stuffy atmosphere with dark wood cherry tables and dim lighting, and this is outside in the sun, and this is more about exploring different things and keeping an open mind after a few beers.
Keeping an open mind is what this firm's business is all about, convincing clients to put their money in some pretty sketchy places. But the co-founder, Jonathan Auerbach, says these days the emerging world is paying off big time.
You know, the focus is all on the G20 and what's the big markets of the world, and for us, the emerging world is contributing growth at 6% plus when the G20 is under 3% on average, and it's where the value is.
With his trademark open collar shirt and shark tooth necklace, Auerbach looks like the kind of guy who'd take you on safari, though today he's just trying to get everyone to taste the Kenyan beer, Tusker.
I suppose if you went to another rooftop, you know, and they were trying to celebrate the S&P 500, or they were options traders, they might have been a few long faces, and instead of drinking beer, they'd probably have a couple bottles of Maker's Mark and some fancy scotch out there. But this is a celebration.
Things are good on the frontier.
Oh, yes.
In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Now, all the business news of the week in a Marketplace Minute. Here's Bill Radke.
The oil has stopped leaking, loosely speaking. BP's still tweaking. Havoc's still wreaking. The drug Avandia came in handy a decade ago. Diabetes, you know. The drug attracts some heart attacks, but weighing the facts, the FDA backs it. Goldman Sachs disputes the facts, but settles its fraud case, and the stock reacts. Earnings season so far, pleasing, with smiles on the face of Morgan Chase, GE, Intel, Alcoa as well. Financial reform survived the storm, but it won't stop a bubble. We're all still in trouble. The economy's in the gutter, a ship without a rudder. Food prices fall, including butter, but the golfing world is all a flutter because Tiger Woods has switched his putter. He's not made for one putter. He needs to be free. I'll see you at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. You're listening to the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media.